Welcome to Is This Real Life? A Bravo podcast that relates our favorite shows to our own lives and the world around us. I'm your host, Mandy Slutsker. Let's get to it. Hi, everyone. I hope you had a wonderful week. Thank you all so much for the feedback from last week's episode with Andrea Ashley of the Adult Child podcast. I really was proud of the episode that we did, and I feel like what's been missing from the Scandoval discourse has been some sort of nuance and trying to understand not just, okay, what would make someone cheat on a partner of nine and a half years, and it less be about just the cheating and more about what could have happened in someone's life that would lead them to engage in such behaviors. And it definitely opened my mind, and I learned a lot researching for it about a number of the people on the show and some of their experiences from childhood. And, you know, my heart really does go out to all of them and to anyone that has grown up in a violent, dysfunctional, or alcoholic home, because it really does impact you and, you know, make you behave certain ways. And then sometimes you grow up and you don't realize why you engage in certain behaviors. And I hope that the people who are involved are able to heal and get some professional help. It sounds like Raquel has been doing that. I mean, let's hope it helps, you know, and as hard as it is, you know, at some point you do have to realize, okay, I am now a grown person. And even though these terrible things happened when I was a child, and they may explain why I behave a certain way, I need to take responsibility for the fact that I am now an adult. And I, in turn, hurt other people. And that's where it gets so, you know, difficult and frustrating, because you can empathize and understand what would make people behave a certain way, but it doesn't excuse the behavior, right? It just explains it. And you can't keep hurting people and harming those around you just because you were hurt and you were harmed when you were younger. So there's just so many layers of this. There's so many shades of gray. There's so much nuance. And I was glad that we had some time to explore that. Another thing that came out this week, I wasn't sure if you guys got a chance to see, was the Randall scandal on Hulu. And it was basically just the main story that came out in the LA Times last summer put into a documentary. So kind of brought to life. You got to see who the assistants were that Randall had harmed, all of the different ways in which they were abused, you know, verbally abused, financially abused, you know, forced to put so many things on their own credit cards that got maxed out and they weren't reimbursed for them. It was very disturbing. But the thing I found the most disturbing is that it didn't seem to scratch the surface from what I think we know is coming out about Randall, which is the documents that Amber, his first wife, filed to get custody of the children last fall, alleged that she had been contacted by the FBI for allegations related to child pornography. And I don't know if this is that he is in possession of that, if he had, been with teenage girls. I don't know, but it's, I think it's a very, 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 very dark situation with him. And I was kind of hoping we would get a little more about what that is. And maybe, I know they all want to make money and they have people like you and I watching these documentaries, even though there's no new intel coming out. But it was interesting to hear in their own words what had happened, and then also hear from Lala's mom and brother. And it just sounded like he could be two different people, where he was just so kind and loving and helpful during really important moments in their lives, such as when Lala's father died. But then at other points, such as when she had Ocean, he was like barely there. He was nasty to her, you know. But I'm definitely waiting until the rest of the story comes out, and we know it will. Another thing that is allegedly going to come out is some sort of big reveal in the part 2 and 3 of the Vanderpump Rules reunion. Alex Baskin, who's the head of Evolution Media, which produces Vanderpump Rules, has come out and said that the entire cast needs to see episodes 2 and 3 before they agree to go film season 11, and that maybe something allegedly could be revealed that would make them maybe not want to re-sign with the show. And there's so many, you know, speculations. Is it that Raquel is pregnant? I don't think we should be speculating about someone's body or pregnancy. But in my humble opinion, it's either something that they already do know and they're just kind of making this a bigger deal than it is, or that something comes out related to production or Lisa Vanderpump, who is an executive producer on the show, that maybe she knew something earlier or whatever. I'm not sure what to expect, but, you know, I think everything that we've seen from Lisa from the last 10 seasons and certainly this reunion is that she is very good at upholding misogyny. You know, the kind of boys will be boys, and how could he resist this beauty queen, and, you know, that kind of, I don't know, that kind of rhetoric. But I do agree with her that, you know, you can condemn people's behavior without vilifying them as a person. Although at some point behavior is describing who a person is, you know, repeat behavior. So, but you know me, I always say I like to separate what someone does from who they are, because what they do and their behavior can change. But what we have seen from Sandoval and Schwartz is a lot of repetitive behavior. Yeah, definitely kind of disappointing to hear some of the misogyny from Lisa. But, you know, this is kind of par for the course for a lot of women. I think a lot of people don't realize that they've internalized misogyny, where men are held to different standards. And it's like, well, of course he did that if they weren't ever having sex. Well, of course, I mean, what could she expect, or she should have known, or kind of putting a lot of the blame on the woman in the relationship. And I think that's a reason that a lot of people don't like Katie. I like Katie Maloney. I've always liked Katie Maloney. I feel like she gets a pretty bad rap because she expresses how she feels. And yeah, can she be mean sometimes? Sure. Was she a bully of Sheena for many seasons? Yes, I did not like that. But when it comes to her and Schwartz, I felt like she always had valid reasons to be upset with him, and everyone else just seemed to side with him, and she was sort of the wet blanket. And then now I think people are finally seeing the kind of person that he is and how he just isn't as sweet and innocent as I think he'd like everyone to believe. All right. One final thing is I did watch the trailer for Luann and Sonia, Welcome to Crappy Lake. And I don't know what I was expecting, but I really thought the trailer was hilarious. I feel like it's sort of obviously a take off like The Simple Life, but also has a Schitt's Creek spin to it. I find Luann and Sonia just so funny. And I'm excited to see how this all plays out. And it'll be nice to see a hopefully more lighthearted show on Bravo. I feel like a lot of these shows have had some really heavy dynamics, and I enjoy some of the heavy dynamics, but I also enjoy some lightness too. And I feel like it's been a little off kilter as of late with, you know, all of the family drama on The Real Housewives of New Jersey, the Scandoval situation. You know, you've got best friends, you know, friendships falling apart on Summer House. It's just, it's a lot. It's a lot. So we'll see what, you know, the next few months of Bravo bring to us. I'm looking forward to this Luann and Sonia thing. I'm looking forward to the new Real Housewives of the OC. I'm hoping that that we get more from Atlanta. I haven't been as impressed with it as of late, but we talk about that a bit on this week's episode. So my guest this week is Gibson Johns. You guys know him from his prolific tweeting about all things Bravo at Gibsonoma on Twitter. And he's also on Instagram. He runs a podcast called We Should Talk by In the Know with Yahoo. And he's just so fun to chat with. And whereas I'm always kind of coming from things trying to understand why people are behaving the way they're behaving, he's always looking at things from a production standpoint. You know, what was happening production-wise that led people to do one thing or another? And I think it leads to a really interesting conversation and multiple, you know, conversations about authenticity on camera and, you know, where does the, you know, show begin and, you know, the real life end and, you know, like all of the kind of complexities and the intertwinedness, I don't know what word I'm going to use, but how everything kind of comes together when people have been on these shows for so long. And it's really hard to peel back sometimes why people do what they do. And is it just like, this is what they would have done in the absence of cameras or not? It's sometimes very hard to say. So I hope you guys enjoy this week's episode. As always, if you enjoy the podcast, go ahead, give it a 5-star rating and leave a kind review. It helps me get new guests and have, you know, more fun conversations like this. And if there's something that you didn't like or you want to share some constructive criticism, my DMs are open. You can reach me at Mandy Slutsker on Instagram. All right, we'll take a quick break and then back with Gibson Johns.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, everyone. I'm here with Gibson Johns, host of We Should Talk, a podcast by In the Know. He's also a prolific Bravo tweeter, and his tweets get like thousands and thousands of views and likes. He's originally from DC, fun fact, and has been called the 13th cast member of Summer House recently by Carl Radke. How are you doing, Gibson?
What an intro. That was a deep pull right from the interview. I love it.
I was just listening to it 2 days ago.
Oh my God. Yeah, that was a good one. He was in a good place for that one.
So what is it like and how do you prepare for all these interviews that you do with the people on the shows that we all watch?
It's definitely like a fine line that I dance around in terms of like commentating on these shows online and then also interviewing people on them. But I feel like I do it in a way that doesn't get me in trouble and they still trust me to open up and to have those conversations. But I honestly don't, I don't prepare that much because I'm already so locked into watching them, seeing what people are, I click on the hashtag every week in terms of like what people are saying from the new episodes. And with Summer House in particular, I've been interviewing them since the first season when nobody really cared about the show. And that was when I was first sort of like cutting my teeth and doing interviews. So it was kind of the perfect convergence for me in terms of like getting to a place with that cast where, you know, I've been in it for the long haul with them, even through some of those bad beginning seasons, particularly with the OGs. So I've been interviewing a lot of them every single season. So I feel really comfortable with them and I think vice versa. So I don't really have to do that much preparing. And I also feel like when these shows are in season, the shows that are based in and around New York, like there's random parties or events or things that they're kind of in the sort of public facing mode when the season's airing. And so like I run into them a good amount or I see them out and about or at Bravo things. And, you know, so I feel really plugged into them in a way that like, I don't really actually have to, that day or the day before I'll write down all my questions. But you know, it doesn't require that much preparation for me for that cast in particular.
I think it's really interesting that you mentioned this like fine line that you try and balance between commentating on the shows and the kinds of things that you say, which sometimes can be critical of people's behavior. Mm-hmm. But I feel like, and this is something I talked about last week a lot with my guest, was criticizing people's behavior, but not the person, because behavior can change. And you know, and I feel like you strike that right balance when you're like, well, I'll call it like I see it. You know, I think it was pretty whatever. I don't know exactly what wording you used. But when Maya this past week tried to cover her microphone and get Oliver to cover his microphone, it was like she didn't want anyone to know how this cheating situation played out. She didn't want cameras to capture it. Or audio to capture it. And I think, you know, people like you and I are like, well, okay, you met him on camera. You agreed to live your life on camera. The rest of your cast is having very uncomfortable conversations on camera. Paige and Craig, Lindsay and Carl, Amanda and Kyle. Like, come on.
Yeah. And I also, it's like, it's also not like she has a partner that doesn't want to be on camera. He's showing up for these parties. He's showing up to the share house. Like, it's not like it's like a Lala early Randall Emmett situation or like a Kenya and her ex's situation where like they don't want anything to do with the show. Like, Oliver clearly is down to be on camera. And like, I think he's kind of like, he has that sort of, he kind of wants to be in the spotlight a little bit. That's kind of what I get the sense from him. And so like, for her to be the one who's a cast member on the show to shy away from, not just shy away, but like actively make sure that those conversations aren't happening on a mic or on camera was really frustrating to watch. And I think that like, you know, a more seasoned, and this is, it's not really critical. I understand why Maya was doing that to a certain extent. Like it's, she was clearly in the throes of finding out about this cheating. She was kind of seeing, I think she was understanding the depth of the betrayal that he was kind of in the process of doing. But ultimately, like, I think a more seasoned reality star would have actually seen that as like an opportunity to have that conversation on camera, to have the moment to seal the next season for themselves. Like, it's, that was really frustrating. And I think that, like, you know, I like Maya, but she hasn't really done that much this season in terms of like contributing to the narrative or contributing to moving things forward. And this was her opportunity to do so. And she not only didn't take it, but she actively made sure it didn't happen. And, you know, it was kind of karma, I think, that like the mic still picked up that conversation in the bathroom, despite them covering them, because I think that we're entitled to see that conversation.
I think so, too. You agreed to be on the show, you know, and she's disappointed me this season.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that last season she showed a lot of promise. She created one of the most memorable moments the Summer House has ever had in that big house-wide conversation about race that was so impactful. And she was also fun. It wasn't just that moment. I think that she was getting along with pretty much everybody in the house. And like this season, I feel like she felt different this season to me. It was a little more negative. It wasn't as engaged. And it definitely was. I think when you think of a sophomore slump for somebody, I would say that this season for Maya falls into that category.
You've, you know, gotten to know the cast pretty well. I'm wondering, I have a number of questions for you. So we're just going to go through like Summer House, Vineyard, Atlanta, Jersey, and end with Vanderpump Rules. Okay. So wanted to know what your takeaway was from the talk, the final talk between Lindsay and Danielle.
Yeah. So my read on that situation is like, I can see how you could watch that conversation and be really frustrated with how Lindsay was acting. She was shut down. She was stone cold. Wall was up. Was not going to get emotional. Was not going to be super engaged in that conversation. And to me, you know, I see how you could see that and be like, okay, she was being way too cold. She wasn't giving Danielle a chance. Like there was nothing for Danielle to sort of latch onto. But I kind of read it as like she was just over it. Like she had had enough. She had probably heard more in that time away from the house that like about what Danielle really did after the engagement or found when she found out about the proposal. And she was probably like, this isn't about, like, I understand Lindsay's point of view a lot more than I understand Danielle's at this point. And if I were Lindsay, I would have been shut down in that moment too. I wouldn't have, I think that she knew that Danielle sort of wanted this final moment. I think that maybe that's how she was reading it. I think Danielle kind of genuinely did want some resolution or some more clarity, but Lindsay wasn't in the place to give that to her. And I understand that. And I think that the part that really irked me was when Danielle sort of turned that corner into the entry of the house, and all of a sudden all the girls like stand up as if they weren't there to just like eavesdrop on. They were there to eavesdrop and to get the tea, and they were giggling and giving everybody these looks. They weren't there to support Danielle, as they told her. And I think that I would be really curious to see what Danielle's perspective on that moment is watching it on TV and seeing sort of what the lead up was. Like, how did those girls get to that, to the front of the house to listen in? And why were they really doing that? Because I don't know. I feel like they misrepresented their intentions in sort of being there. But I, you know, ultimately I just am understanding Lindsay's perspective on it more and more as the weeks go on. And I don't blame her for being shut down.
Yeah.
I really don't.
I feel the same way. I feel like there is something there in the fact that a number of the women that have been on the show, past and present, have had issues with Lindsay. But for no sure. one's been able to clearly articulate exactly the types of behavior that she's engaging in that is upsetting them so much. So I'm hoping to get some kind of clarity at the reunion, like what exactly has she been doing time after time after time,
totally.
Where you don't trust her, where you don't feel closeness with her. But from this whole Danielle Lindsay thing, what I notice with Lindsay is that when she gets hurt, rather than sharing how she's sad, she shares how she's angry. And that anger and how it she shows up with it, I think, is very unnerving to a lot of people.
For sure. For sure. But to me, it's like Danielle, you'd think that Danielle would be used to seeing that, to be used to dealing with that, and maybe not directed at her, but she has seen Lindsay in this sort of mindset before, like in similar situations. And I think that what you said with our articulation of what Lindsay's done, I agree with that, because Danielle's had several moments this season, several opportunities this season to articulate her real problems with what is going on between Lindsay and Carl or Lindsay and her friendship. And she has not taken those opportunities. And she has really just, she has not, again, articulated what those problems are. And I feel like I read that is because she is genuinely so emotionally invested in this friendship. I really do believe that. And I think that she gets flustered. I think the emotions overtake Danielle in a way that they don't necessarily overtake Lindsay.
Yeah. I feel like there's a part of Danielle that just needs to grow up. And it's sure. not a fun thing to hear that you have to grow up, but like, you are not 25 anymore. Mm-hmm. It is no longer like the rest of your peers are not at the point where they're just getting drunk all the time and having these like relationships that don't really mean a whole lot. And, you know, like, people are moving forward with their lives and that looks different. And if you can't adapt to where your friends are, which is sometimes sober, right? Like, I felt every time she had a conversation where she had had anything to drink, it was offensive. It's like,
right.
why
yeah,
are I, you yeah. showing up drunk? And I felt the same way about Kyle.
Yeah, and I wonder, like, this season, obviously the big subtext is that her and Robert are having so many problems. I don't think that we knew that watching the show, but I don't think within the context of the show that was really portrayed. As I think the problems were more intense that we kind of were privy to. But I think that, like, maybe in her mind, like you said, like, I think that last summer she was in this perspective of like, yeah, I am growing up. I'm in this grown up relationship. I'm investing in this person for my future. And she was kind of maybe showing signs of that. And then now she's in this mindset of like, holy fuck, like, I might actually lose this relationship. And Lindsay and Carl moving on to that next stage without me, because I'm going to be kind of 5 steps behind now, because we're going to break up probably. So now she's kind of latching on to the younger crowd in the house who have not moved on from that lifestyle. And so I think she's kind of really genuinely caught in a place where it's like, should I grow up? Should I go with the people that are in their mid to late 30s, or should I go with the people who are in their late 20s, 25. early 30s?
Yeah. It's
you know,
But another part of it is, and I think this women or myself, you know, when you're 25 and your friends get engaged, you feel a lot more invested in the relationship, like you're part of it, right?
Right, right.
But as you get older, you learn like, oh, this has nothing to do with me. Like, I don't need to be, you know, at the engagement. I don't need to be privy to when the engagement happens. But like earlier, I feel like because you live such a communal lifestyle in your early 20s, you know, where you're constantly seeing your friends multiple times a week, like you feel so much more invested and you feel sometimes you don't always understand where the boundaries are. But then as you get older, you kind of learn sometimes where those boundaries are, like, oh, these are my friends, but they're also a couple and certain things are between them. And so her making the engagement and the decision of who knew so much about her and not about the couple indicates to me that she's still in this like mindset of, you know, a younger person, and she just hasn't yet figured out that like some things just aren't about you and your 100%, thoughts and feelings don't really matter to other people.
Yep.
So you have to hold them in, you know?
And I think the sort of the kind of back and forth there is like they're in a share house in the Hamptons, which is usually something that like people in very their 20s young are doing.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So I think there's this sort of mind fuck that's happening where it's like we're supposed to live this like younger lifestyle, but we're also not as young as we were when the show started, or you know what I mean? It's like it's kind of, it must be, I can't really wrap my mind, wrap my head around what it's like to sort of be in that. And it's not to really defend her, but it's just like trying to understand where she's coming from. And I think that that's, I really do think that she feels stuck between sort of ages and lifestyles.
That's a good point. No, I feel for her. I think for me, the issue is seeing her since the, you know, the summer was filmed, and then she's still holding so true to her convictions makes me be like, is she not capable of self-reflection? Which worries. I think she is.
Well, I think at the end of last summer, when we all got the whiff of like their friendship having issues, Danielle didn't post about the engagement. There were, you know, there were whispers from like sources on the ground. At BravoCon, obviously, it was like really icy between them. I think that for so long, a lot of people just assumed it was like, okay, what did Lindsay do? You know, what did Lindsay do to cause this? That was just the assumption that I think, like, I would say a majority of viewers and fans of this show made. And I haven't, she's not, you know, faultless in this situation, but like, she is not, it's not, that's not the case. It's not what did Lindsay do? It's a lot more complex than that. And I think it's a lot more cloudy than I think that we expected it to be. And I agree that like, I think Danielle in the lead up to all of this sort of fell back on that presumption that it was Lindsay. And I don't think that that's necessarily the reality of the situation.
It reminds me of how time and time again, housewives think the audience will be on their side when they all gang up against one person, such as the season with LVP, where I agreed. I thought LVP was lying, but this like obsession to take her down felt a little bit intense. And then, you know, next season, like every time it's like when it's one against everyone else, the viewers tend to naturally feel for the one person that's kind of being ganged up against. And every
time, I say this all the time, I say
it's housewives
so true.
And the people are just like, they don't get the mindset that the viewer is in watching it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, it happened like anytime somebody is trying to ice anybody out, like Wendy on Potomac last season, when Giselle and Robin are icing her out so hard, we're gonna stick up for Wendy. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Like it's the same thing that plays out. And I agree. You know, I don't want them to play to the audience, but like the fact that a lot of these people can't wrap their mind around that idea, it's pretty basic to me. It's pretty basic that people are gonna they're gonna root for the underdog, to be honest. So
totally,
that's just kind of natural human instinct, I think.
Speaking of the underdog, let's go a little bit north to Martha's Vineyard. Mm. So.
Emphasis on dog.
I know. I'm trying to figure out where to start with this.
Yeah.
I understand the dog scenarios that keep happening, but how do you feel about how the house handled removing two cast members from it? That whole process.
Yeah, my instinct in watching that, and I think I tweeted this right after I watched it, was like, I just thought that it happened so quickly and without a say from Mariah or Phil. And I think that those two situations are very different, and they probably, you know, were entitled to different levels of input, Mariah and Phil. I think Phil's was a little more cut and dry, and like he came in so hot and was rubbing every single person the wrong way. And he was kind of like, I don't know, it was definitely, I think with Mariah, it was like, it was more up to like interpretation of like who saw what in that little situation with Bria. And they're watching too much Selling Sunset, Bria.
Right.
with Bria. And they go down to the basement and they like vote. Within 10 minutes are like voting two people out of the house, essentially like a survivor. And I'm like, at least bring them down there to like state their case or have a civil conversation. The fact that it's kind of like, you know, put it on Jasmine to go talk to Mariah and kick her out of the house. And like, I don't know, there was something that irked me about it from this perspective of not giving them just a moment to say their piece and, or to just like cool down a little bit. You know, they were both hot. And it's also like, we're on the third episode of this show's entire run, and we're kicking two people out of the house. It just felt really, I don't know. It felt really quick to me.
I agree that it was quick. One thing I'm trying to keep in mind while watching it is that a few people on the cast have shared that some of them were there for 30 days and some of them were there for 15 days. And the way they're showing the audience is as if it was 15 days.
Got it.
And so I think the dynamics, that's why the dynamics are so off.
I didn't realize that.
And I think it was Preston.
So had they been there for 2 weeks before, or they stayed for two more weeks?
I'm not entirely sure. I think it was the before, maybe.
Got it.
I don't know. Or they're showing days as if it's like one day, but it's really 3 days.
That would make sense, because it does feel like they're more settled into a dynamic right now by the third episode. I agree with – I definitely see that now. So maybe it does make more sense that they're already voting two people out. I don't know, but –
Oh, it was crazy.
But if you're thinking about it from like a show production perspective, it's a lot to get two people out of a house 3 episodes in. I'm sorry. It's especially within the same episode. I don't know. It just felt
in the first season. It's like, we don't even know you enough and to like, trust that you're making the right decisions.
Totally. And like, did Mariah get, you know, aggressive with Bria, and like, was that a push? I think that's up to interpretation, honestly, even just watching that footage back. It's like, I don't know if that's like, to me, that's not a fireable offense, which is essentially what they're saying. But I'm also like the cynical reality TV viewer in me who just wants mess. Like, you have to keep some of these messy people around for the drama. Like, Bria and Mariah were, they were not going to get along. There was some friction there, clearly. I kind of want to see more of that, and maybe eventually for them to resolve it. But like, they clearly come from things at different perspectives. And like, you need that for a show, and to kick two instigators out of the house, I don't know. It just felt, I hope that they can continue having mess and drama going forward, because it, I don't know. I don't want it to like, you know, cut them off at the feet by taking some drama out.
I think Shanice will bring enough drama for everyone.
You're right.
She is such a mess, that woman. Mm-hmm. I feel like her and Bria are people that have shown us that they just have very poor judgment in so many different ways. Like, not just like romantically, like in friendships and work. It's like, what are when they were both like, Phil's so great, I'm like, you have never hung out with him outside of a club promotion
setting. Literally 100%. Yep. They're like, this guy's hot, he likes to go out, let's invite him. And they didn't know anything about him.
Like, and then they're like, wow, this is just not the Phil I know. I'm like, have you seen him in daylight?
You didn't know it, right? Exactly.
Right. And like Bria, just or the all of it is just interesting. Mm-hmm. I like the dynamic between
me too.
The girls that all used to work together in
at the Playboy like, Club. The Playboy like, come Club, on. That's,
and then
that's heaven.
And then having this like Liberian husband who's much more conservative and mm-hmm. kind of, I don't think, fully knows the full history of his wife's like
definitely not
everything. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of an interesting dynamic. Who are you enjoying watching the most on that show?
Jordan is far and away to me the biggest star. I think that I like how she handles herself in conflict. I think she, within the heat of a moment, can still like really articulate and express her opinion really well. And she isn't afraid to go there. But she also, yeah, I Jordan to me is taking it so far. What about you? Who do you think is who are you enjoying the most?
I'm enjoying Preston the most, but maybe that's
Preston's
from
great
DC,
too. Preston is great.
I know what he does outside of the show, and it's
right,
so
right.
impressive that I'm like, totally. Yes, this is the kind of person we need. But I agree, Jordan pops as well.
Yeah, no, I think I'm curious to see more from Preston within the confines of the show. But I agree, I really like him, and I'm excited about because he has such a big personality too, and I. Those two definitely stand out. Absolutely.
Okay. Do you think, and this might be mean to say, but do you think Jasmine is kind of like the summer house version of those, I can't remember the twins that were on.
The Workus twins.
The Workus twins. In that like they're building a show around her, but in a couple seasons, she'll be kicked to the curb and it's actually going to be Jordan and like Shanice and just the other ones,
right?
You know?
Yeah, I see what you're saying. I'm frustrated by Jasmine because I really like her, and I think that like her first impression I think is really good, but then I think that she's trying to do a little too much of the like wifey character, and I just don't think that her and Silas thought they were going to come off really differently once the show aired, and yeah. and their relationship, I think, doesn't look great on the show. And I think that I'm curious if they get a second season, how they rejigger it a little bit in terms of like how authentic they're coming, because they're not coming across as super authentic. And I think that Jasmine in particular is like a pretty, I think she has it in her. I just think that she's relying too much on this like new, she had just gotten married 2 months before the filming started. And so I'm like, maybe that was too fresh in her mind that like her life was supposed to change because she's married, and Silas definitely comes off as really controlling. And to me, I was sort of trying to liken them to Amanda and Kyle, but I think that it's not necessarily a super apt comparison actually, just because they're a central couple. But yeah, I don't know. I see that comparison with the Workus twins in terms of building it around them. My gut says I want to give Jasmine the benefit of the doubt that like she can turn it around for herself, because the Workus twins came back for a second season and they were just as bad as they were the first season, you know? Whereas like I could see Jasmine watching this back and be like, I was doing too much.
I hope so. But I also wonder if it's like production that thought mm-hmm. that the audience would connect with certain people, and we actually connect with different people, which is what I yeah. think happened on Summer House. Mm-hmm. Like we connected mm-hmm. more with Kyle, even though the show wasn't built around him. It was built around
right.
the Workus twins. And then as soon as they removed the Workus twins, it was continued to build around Kyle.
Right, right. Yeah. So who do you, if you were to take Jasmine and Silas out of the situation, does that fall to Preston? Does that fall to Jordan?
I don't
does that
know yet, because it's been,
yeah, it's not, hard to tell.
It's hard to tell yeah, so to early, tell. But possibly, I feel like Jordan and Preston have the most charisma,
the most magnetic, yeah.
as reality stars.
100%. And you know who else? I really like Amir. I think Amir is really promising as somebody on the show too. I think that he has a good personality. He's pretty dynamic. He's good looking. Yeah, he's the sort of third one for me that I'm keep my eye on.
He's great, but I heard that he has a girlfriend and that he just went and shot this.
Oh, I saw something about this.
As a single person, which I was like, this isn't The Bachelor where you just like go and you pretend but also you're single.
Who's the other guy who did that? Who like just announced he's a girlfriend on the show, even though he's DMing all the girls? Yeah, Nick. Yeah, Nick said that. And like, I'm like, okay, this is, again, there's so much promise in this show, but like these are stumbling blocks that we need to like not have happening, because like I need people who are actually authentic, who are like, they're single. So they're ready to mingle.
I think
they're not hiding things.
Is actually authentic, but is hiding things possibly from himself.
Got it. Well, the preview for the next episode kind of indicates that. Yeah.
But just the fact that he will DM women in like such a bold way, and then his actual personality in real life with the same women is shy, indicates like something's off. Like you're online. I agree. Like there's something weird going on. I don't know what it is.
I feel like I've seen that in life before. Through my female friends, I've heard about certain guys that act that way. So we'll see.
It's interesting.
But it's very promising. And I'm still so excited about this show. And like every episode's been entertaining. And like there's been drama in every episode. So I'm here for it.
Speaking of drama in every episode, Atlanta. Okay. Thoughts on whether or not Candy picks and chooses what she shows on camera? Like, what is your reaction particularly to the shooting that happened at Blaze Steakhouse and her seemingly unwillingness to want to talk about it on camera?
Yeah, I think that over the years, I think I've seen this conversation play out online. And when somebody says that she's hiding things or doesn't want to address personal things on camera, her supporters, who I love Candy, but her supporters will say, well, look at all the stuff she's done over the years. And it's like, yeah, but she's been on the show for like 10 years. So of course she's shown things over the years, but I do think she's pulled back in recent seasons. And I think that scene where the producer steps in and is like, are we really not going to talk about this? And kind of, they were a little cagey about it. I really didn't like that. That's trying to pull a fast one on us. When we all know what happened, and it's just sort of like, I know it's a tough thing to talk about. I know it doesn't make your business look good, but it happened, and we all know about it. And you know, her and Kenya in particular, and rightfully so, they sort of have kind of anointed themselves, and they sort of anointed themselves as like the crown wearers of Atlanta, and like they're sort of like marching the show forward. And again, they're entitled to that because they're two of the longest running people on this show, but if you're going to do that, you have to be 100% authentic, I think. And, you know, going off that, a thought that I've had recently is just like, I'm enjoying Atlanta. It's one of my favorites, but there's something slightly off about the dynamic still for me. And part of it, I think, is like Candy and Kenya have such a, I do believe their friendship is very authentic and genuine, but almost to the point where like they're sort of kind of covering for one another in terms of like how much they're willing to show, or they're never going to cross one another. So like, that's just sort of like two pillars in the sand that aren't moving, you know, it's this sort of, and they're like, kind of, they're sort of icing Marlo. They're very much icing Marlo out. And it's just sort of like the dynamic of this group overall is not fluid enough right now for me. It's a little two-sided, and there's not that much gray area. And that loops back to, I think, the Candy thing of like, she was being cagey about that. She was trying to hide that. And if you're going to be sort of the queen of the show, you can't be shying away from addressing the big things happening in your life. I really believe that.
I agree. I 100% agree. And I think that Marlo had her anger displaced at Drew when Drew 100%. Used the term
that's valid.
Incident to describe the shooting. That's just like a word that came to her. And you know, it was what was interesting to me, which I wish we could like dig into a bit more, is Drew's like, I'm from Chicago. I have family that's died due to gun violence. And then Marlo's like, my nephew died from gun violence. And I'm like, this is actually a survey came out maybe 2 months ago or a month and a half ago from Kaiser Family Foundation that said I think like 1 in 5 Americans has someone close to them who has died as a result of gun violence.
Wow. That's
and insane. I think a lot of us think, wow, that's crazy. That's so high. But it's true. We just don't always talk to people, or people don't bring it up because it's a little bit taboo, right? And it makes it sound like there's something wrong with your family or the person that you love. Maybe they were involved in something they shouldn't have been because it's their fault they were shot.
There's implications there. Yeah, for sure.
You know, and to, and then under the whole, like, you know, our Candy's followers ghetto, like that whole thing too. Like, I just think there's like a lot of layers happening, and I want to
go deeper there for sure.
To go deeper, because gun violence is something that impacts Americans so much, and it impacts some communities more than others. And Atlanta is certainly a community that has a lot of it. And I want to hear like how that's impacted each of them.
Yeah. And I think the point you said about like, them saying that people who follow Candy are quote unquote ghetto, and like, and that's something that like, as a white viewer, I just don't have that much of a of an understanding about, like, just sort of within the Black community, like the just like sort of how people think about different kinds of people and where they come from and sort of what are some of those taboos. And I don't have an understanding for that. So I agree, like going deeper on that would honestly be so enlightening for, I think, for a lot of people who love and watch the show and these women. And yeah, I think Drew using the word incident, I think it's both because it's a sensitive topic for her, but I also think that there was an element of like not it's tiptoeing around it for the sake of Candy. Mm-hmm. I don't think that like it was insensitive to Marlo to not call it a shooting, and that was a stretch to me. I think that Marlo was trying to, and I love Marlo, but she was trying to make a moment out of that, but I think the word use of incident was layered, and both from the thing that you said about Drew's past and her family, but also I do think there was an element of tiptoeing for Candy's sake in that moment, but while still bringing it up, but like really gingerly.
One thing I love about Atlanta, and just like the Black community in general, don't want to speak out of turn, is just as soon as you find out someone's related to you, this like, oh my God, they're my cousin, you know, and it's just like, we are family, like so quickly. I just, as a white Jew, I don't know that I would meet someone and like be so close. But you know what? This is also something we saw with the Mormon community on Utah, Salt Lake City, Utah, where like they didn't really know each other as cousins, and then they find out later and they're like, we're family. And I'm like, this sure. you don't know them. Like, like, I get it. Mm-hmm. But I just loved the whole Ralph and Courtney being like really leaning in to the we're cousins thing. Now, I can feel like they're related because they're two of the most annoying people I think I've ever seen on camera.
Courtney, I really can't. Courtney, it's really hard.
I don't know that someone has irked me more since Lydia on the OC.
Oh my God, that's a throat. Yeah, that's a lot. It's a lot. It's every time she's on camera, it is 150%. It is. Her voice is really grating to me. Like, it's the whole, she's trying so hard. Like, talk about inauthentic. Like, that is just, I have not seen anything redeeming from her yet on this show, on this season. It's, I find her extremely hard to watch.
Whole Ralph and Drew stuff kind of hard to watch because I'm like, where does it go left? Because they're now portraying that they're in the best place that they've been.
I mean, like, it's, you know, it's one of those things where it's kind of what I was saying about Jen Shah. When Jen Shah was, you know, facing the final verdict of her case, and she finally pled guilty or took the guilty plea, it kind of made me think, have we ever seen anything actually authentic from Jen Shah in her 3 seasons on Salt Lake City? I don't think we ever really did. And with Drew, consider now that we know where her relationship is headed, how this season ends for her, and how much of a front she's put up for now 3 seasons of her relationship, even though their darkness kind of like cracked through over the seasons. I don't know how much authenticity she's ever shown us, and it's really frustrating. And I don't dislike her, but I just don't think that she's ever been that truthful with us on the show. I think that she, and maybe it's like a slight delusion or a slight just like how she sees things, but I just don't think that she's, the way she frames almost everything about her life is like, just doesn't ring true to me. And I know that she's showing us some of the divorce and separation at the end of the season, but that's in a long time. That's like in like 13 episodes, you know, like that's, there's going to be a long time, a lot of time of we're in the best place and we're doing well. And it's like, that's just not true. And
I think she lies to herself because I feel like we've watched her lie to herself. And then we've watched her in real time during that date last season where he's so mean to her. And she is like crying. Like, I think she's being authentic. It's like she gets through by convincing herself of a story. But she's been pretty
probably true.
Open about the things that he does that are not good. Like, she's not trying to hide his behavior. But
no, but there's this, if you think about the first two seasons she's been on, they've both started out with these like big accusations about Ralph and these really sketchy things. The first season was like the Tampa thing. That was like literally their first episode, right?
I think so bad.
Literally. And then the second one was the thing with like the assist, was it like Sheree's assistant? It was like something like that. Those are both the very beginning of her first two seasons. And neither one of those things we ever got resolved. Ever. They pop off at the beginning of the season and then they just like completely disappear. And it's just like, I don't know. I don't know if it's a production thing. I don't know if it's her lying to herself thing. I don't know, but I find it really, really, it doesn't fulfill, it never gets resolved. So there's no like fulfillment there. And so it's a really weird experience for me as a viewer watching that and kind of, I try to parse through it, but it's hard to.
It reminds me of, I know people in my life who have, like, from the outside me looking are like, oh, that's a tumultuous relationship, or that relationship is not in a good place. Like, I'm talking to you, you're not sleeping in the same room, you're arguing a lot, you're, you know, all of these issues. And then when eventually the time comes where one person in the couple decides to file for divorce or break up, it's like, can you believe? And I'm like,
right.
You don't want to say, you know, you don't want to say that, but
yeah.
It's like the person is still so shocked because even though they've acknowledged that things are bad, they've never let themselves get to a place where they think it's enough that the family would break up. And I think Drew is someone who is so good at lying to herself and to us, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess it's more getting down to the intention behind it and whether
what is that intention.
And yeah, totally. And I that's what I would love to get answers on. I know we're only like three episodes in, but I would love to get answers on that at the reunion. I would love for Andy to go sort of down that rabbit hole of like, were you putting up a front like, you know, Ariana and Tom Sandoval apparently kind of were, or was this the lies you were telling yourself to get through and to maintain your marriage and to keep your family together? I don't know.
Totally.
But it's tough. And I guess I just wish that the cast in previous seasons had helped sort of carry those storylines along a little bit by asking her more about it. Cause I think that I do think the ball was dropped in her first two seasons in terms of like really, really putting that under a microscope and questioning it and maybe it would have unlocked something in her earlier. You know what I mean? I don't know who could have gotten through to her. I don't know that, but I don't know if like the effort was really made. But I think it's taken some time for people to really care about Drew within the cast. You know what I mean? I think that like now she's in it, but it took a while for her to get there.
Yeah. Speaking of families breaking up, Jersey. Teresa getting married. So I put myself through the torture of watching that. I
watched it as well.
So over the Gorgas versus the Judices. And like, if we're going to have to relitigate why she went to prison and try and blame people that aren't Joe Judice and Teresa for like lying on loan applications and in federal documents. Mm. Also, once you're on TV and you're doing things that are illegal, it's no one needs to like quote unquote call the feds. That's not like,
right.
It's not like there's this big tip line and they're like, ooh, I wasn't looking into this tax fraud until, right?
Right.
There was drip, 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 drip prior to being on the show.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm so sick of this narrative and like wanting to blame anyone other than the two of them that got them in jail. And do I think that the prison sentences were outsized for what the offense was? Probably, right?
Mm-hmm.
But mm-hmm. that's just because they're reality stars. And I do believe that the judge wanted to make an example out of them. And
right.
That's funny.
It's so true what you say. It's like, it's the way that it's framed sometimes on these shows is that it's like there literally is like a phone you can pick up that's like, if you are a reality star and you suspect that your co-star has done something illegal, call this number. Like, that's literally how they kind of frame it sometimes, that it's that simple, as that black and white, which it's clearly not. But yeah, the bringing up of things a decade old is, I'm so beyond over it, whether it's the prison stuff or how Melissa got on the show. Like, I'm sorry. When I interviewed Melissa at the beginning of the season, I called it the original sin, about the question of like how she got on the show. And like, that's kind of what it is at this point. But like, I'm just so fucking done talking about it. Like, it's, and I think that it's something that Teresa fans in particular really, they bring it up every week. In response to something that Teresa does wrong on the show or gets caught in a lie or misbehaves, whatever, that's what they bring up to defend it. And it's like, can you bring something up even from the past 3 years that can help defend how things are falling apart now? Because it's like, that's the only defense that people have sometimes for Teresa. And it's not even getting old. It's been old for years. And I'm with you in that it's just... What's even the point of bringing that stuff up?
I don't think either of them or Jor Gorga, like, I don't want to hear them say they care about family. You clearly do not. It is not your top. No, okay, maybe not that you don't care. It's not your top priority. Your top priority is being on a TV show and making money from that show. If your top priority was family, you would leave the show. There are other ways to make money. You wouldn't have as much, right? You wouldn't have all the notoriety, but you might still have your actual family intact.
Well, I think both of them care more. I think they both care about family, but only their own kids and partners. That's what they care about.
But the way they talk about family is
right. No,
is like as if you care about your sibling. You don't. I know,
they misrepresent that for sure. Yeah,
it bothers me. Like there is not a single thing that could keep me from going to my own brother's wedding. Nothing. Nothing. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter if mm-hmm. I don't like who he's marrying or anything like that. Like that's I happen to love who he married. But it's I don't know. I don't like all of them. I feel like it's like rotten and I don't want to side with anyone and I'm like annoyed with all of them and I just want it to stop and go away. And like one of them must be removed. I cannot keep watching this shit.
To me,
or both. Let's remove both.
Okay. what I'll say is like I'm not as over the. I don't need more of it, but I'm not as like frustrated and like at my wit's end with the Melissa Teresa thing in terms of watching it as other people are. Mm. I found that this season was different in the way that like they finally were admitting they didn't like each other. And I think there was a pretense and sort of a facade that was taken down last reunion. And I think that like Melissa tried to play nice all season. Just, I think because she does recognize that people are over this and it was Teresa's year. It was the wedding. That's why she didn't bring up, you know, what had happened before the season started with them calling Joe and telling him about the quote unquote rumor. But like, so to me, there was something knew about it, even though it wasn't a new conflict. There was a new lens put on it this year for me. Do I want it to be the central thing going forward? Absolutely not. And this reunion kind of, and everything we've heard, it just points to the fact that they're literally estranged and like they can't even be in the same place as one another. But to me, the biggest thing is Louis. I think Louis is scary. I feel like he's to me, where there's smoke, there's fire, and there's so much smoke coming from his direction. And, you know, even Gia said this in her confessional this season of like, the producer asks, what changed? What changed? And she says, well, Louis came into the picture. And it's like, well, you just kind of told on yourself right there. Like, that's, to me, the things took such a turn. Things went down the path of no return when he came in the picture and he started dividing them and isolating Teresa. And that's what I think. And I think that I really find him to be like really hard to watch.
Yeah, he's very sketchy. There's a lot there that isn't great.
A lot.
But I also think there's, I don't know, a lot with Joe Gorga that's sketchy and not great. Not abusive, right? But like, there's so much financial shit. There is him posting houses that he claims that he renovated that he didn't. You know, like there's something off with them too. And I'm so sick of all of them. And then I was expecting to watch the wedding and it be so much about the Melissa versus Teresa. And it wasn't, like, it was all about Louis. And I thought, wow, okay, this is like, I see his family showing up. I see, like, as soon as he said that his father was an alcoholic and that only got sober 8 years ago, and this man is 50 something years old. Oh my God. It all came together. In my last episode, I had someone who has a podcast called Adult Child, which is short for Adult Children of Dysfunctional Families, which came from Adult Children of Alcoholics, which is like traits that people tend to exhibit if they grew up in a home with alcoholism or other dysfunction.
And does he exhibit those traits?
Yes. Although he has a lot more anger than other. So like Tom Schwartz exhibits a lot of the traits. He grew up in a pretty violent home and trying to protect his younger siblings and, so like the fact that he's hiding always by the bushes when there's like big arguments happening on the show, like completely makes sense. I think Louis has the opposite where he's like, I must be on the like front lines defending. And so I do feel like there's a lot there with why Louis is the way he is. And hopefully it sounds like he's trying to get help, but he would have to acknowledge that he's part of the problem. But I was very like disgusted by just the fact that Melissa and Joe would post something on Instagram the day of the wedding. And I remember this all because I got COVID the next day and then I was like stuck at home for 10 days straight.
Yeah.
When this was all happening. So I was like watching it all play out on Instagram. I had nothing to do. And I'm like, why on her happy day, no matter how much crap she's done, like, why can't you exhibit some
To me, the prohibition party was 3 days before that. So, like, to me, I think they were still heated, and Teresa and Louis were caught with their pants down at that party. And and I think that, like, if I were Joe and Melissa in that situation, I'd be pissed off too. And them posting on the day of, I think in the moment before we knew exactly what had happened at this finale party, I see what you're saying, but now that we know what went down, I actually don't have a problem with it. I really don't. And is it stoking the fire? Yes. But, you know, Melissa with that 11th hour reveal in the finale to me just said everything to me in terms of like what the actual dynamic that we hadn't seen all season was and what was actually happening. And I don't know. I find it hard to, I see problems on both sides, but I find it hard to really not be on their side. I was just like naturally as a viewer, that's how I look at it.
I think that makes sense. I think a lot of people fall on one side or the other. I've just been so disgusted where I'm like, it's all rotten.
And I don't blame you.
I'm on Jen Fessler's side. I'm on the like,
I'm hey, obsessed with Jen Fessler.
She's my favorite person I've seen on the any of the shows in so long. I'm like, you stay and you have fun, Margaret. Like, how dare you show up at a wedding and then leave early? Like, just don't go if you have such strong opinions about it. But you're making this whole thing about that, then don't attend the wedding. I get it. I'm not going to judge her for not attending the wedding. But, like, if you go to a wedding, you should be there to celebrate the couple. And you should stay to celebrate the couple. If it's about anything other than the couple, then get the hell out of there, you know? I think we've all been invited to a wedding where we're not like
totally,
you know, and I don't go.
I wonder if they got paid extra to for like an extra episode. You know what I mean? They probably did. Oh my god,
that's even darker.
No, I know it is, but I think with all of these people on any of these shows, it's like,
you're right. No, you're so right.
There's no distinction to be made between life and reality show and life. I think it's so intertwined, especially for Teresa and anything that Teresa and all these people on the show, but like that's her, their life is like making decisions, like going to a wedding, even though they don't support the couple because you're on a show with them and like you do want that extra paycheck. Like you're right.
I didn't even think about that.
Yeah.
Totally. You're right. It's so hard because we want these people to show up authentically on camera.
Right.
But there are so many other things that are causing them.
There's so many other things. Yeah.
Such as money. And like,
I think, you know, Margaret's one of two people that was crying during the ceremony, which is so honestly interesting to me. But like, was that, what were those tears really about? I don't know. You know, it's. Was it really because of Joe and Melissa not being there and her being sad from a family perspective, or was it, I don't know.
It was like, about her own estrangement within her own family.
I think that like there's so many, the wedding special in particular, I think it was basically a bonus. And it was just sort of like, I think you have to think about why all these people were there and why different things were happening in a slightly different way than I think we would the normal season.
Oh my gosh. Well, should we end with Vanderpump Rules?
What a way to end it. Is there anything else we're all really thinking about? Like besides this?
Ever?
Like it's just.
So I went to.
I wake up thinking about it.
I love it. I went to the Duplex Diner at 18th and U in DC.
Oh my God.
Because they have a trivia called Smart Ass Trivia that one of my neighbors goes to every Wednesday. And this past Wednesday, they changed the time and the topics. So one was a regular, just like game of trivia. And then the next was a Bravo themed game of trivia. You would have done incredible. There was an entire round only on like the one hit wonder shows. That was really tough. Like NYC
Prep, that's for true fans. But that's like
that was intense.
That's for people who rewatch a lot of things. Which I don't rewatch a lot of things, but I've watched a lot of the one hit wonder shows. But you know, that's
and they
true
would have like a clip right from like some comment during it, and then like a follow up question. And I was like, oh my god. It was so hard. Anyways, me and my friend Helene came in third place, despite being a team of two. And then we stayed for like at least the first 15 minutes to watch the first part of the reunion. And I thought I wouldn't want to watch it at a bar because I want to hear everything. People were silent. An extremely crowded bar. It was like as if we were watching like the NBA finals. Like people were just following it, like zeroed in, reacting in the moment.
That's what I'm trying to parse through because I want to go to a watch party, but I need to hear every single word that's uttered. And so like even alone in my apartment on Wednesday night, there was so much going on that I felt like I missed a million things. So if I'm in a bar, I really want to go because I want the sort of unifying group experience. I feel like it'd be very gratifying.
You should go with Sophie Ross.
I've been talking to her east. Yeah. And that place is very close to my apartment, but I think I'll go.
You can watch after too, like the Peacock version. So
Which is better anyway.
I just had so much fun doing it. Okay, so the biggest takeaways for me, and then I want to ask you your biggest takeaways, was one, Raquel didn't seem to know that Sandoval was still having sex with Ariana. And I think she thought like, oh my God, he's cheating on me with her. And then that I just think James Kennedy is a comedic genius, and the fact that he got everyone to laugh after pissing everyone off, like including the cameramen, were like giggling when he was just like, "I've got to, you know, put me in timeout," and like
it was just no, he. Okay, first of all, first point. The smirk they showed of Raquel, or like the change in facial expression when Sandoval said that, or Ariana and Sandoval said they were still sleeping together, being intimate. When they cut to Raquel, and her face just, it was just a slight tweak that indicated exactly what you just said. That was one of the best moments of the, that was one of the most
that was the highlight for me, where I'm like,
it's like, that just shows you how kind of warped her mind was around all of this, I think.
Yeah.
Like, come on.
And possibly manipulated, you know, to think that, like,
yes, totally. Like what was he telling her?
Sleeping with my partner. It's just,
I mean, like, as Ariana said, this was sort of the thread that he was following. This is the storyline he was pushing of them not being intimate, them being living separate lives. And from her perspective, that wasn't true. So he was obviously telling Raquel that too. Like, that's clearly just like what he was telling not just her, but the world and the show. I agree. James and Lala are winning this reunion. Like, obviously Ariana is winning this reunion, but they in practice are, I mean, them together to me is like, they're hitting a stride together right now in this reunion that we haven't seen between the two of them in a while, just in terms of like it being really great and great TV, fun to watch. Because James is bringing the sort of what's the word I'm looking for? The fireworks, the physical comedy of it all. Mm-hmm. But Lala is using her words in a way that she's getting heated, but she's still articulating herself, and she's still like cutting really deep with words and with her side comments. And it's really gratifying. It is, I mean, seeing her shutting Lisa Vanderpump down, not once, but like a couple times, I mean, that needed to be done. And I think that, like, you know, I think this has been such a, you know, watershed moment for this show and for Bravo and as a whole. But I'm already sort of trying to think ahead of, like, what does the next season look like? How do they follow this up? How do they still create good TV? And I really think that, like, putting some focus on Lisa's relationships with some of them and how, you know, for so long, she was the mother figure. She was the person giving them advice, being the mentor, being their literal boss at the restaurants. But now she's kind of maintained that status for herself, but they're all growing up. They're reaching a point where, you know, they don't have to follow her lead. They don't have to listen to her. They don't have to go to Villa Rosa and get her perspective on it, because, like, they just don't need that. And I think Lala pushing back on her in that moment, Ariana even pushed back on her a couple times in this first part, that speaks to me of a more level playing, the playing field becoming more level. And I think that that's really interesting. And I think they should definitely mind that. And I think that it gives her a reason to be there too. Cause I think that one of the things the last couple of seasons, it's like, why is Lisa Vanderpump even still like such
here.
A presence on this
why
show?
Why is she here? Yeah,
totally. But like, she can be one of the gang soon enough. You know what I mean?
I think so. I think that's what they need to lean into. I've noticed that a number of them will push back on her. I mean, Allie, during the second to last episode, so it was supposed to be the finale, and Allie mm-hmm. and James are getting ready to go to his, like, where he's DJing some big thing that I don't know about because I don't follow the music scene.
Never heard of it. Yeah.
And James is like, and Allie's coming to support me. And then, you know, Lisa says something like, oh, more like to keep an eye on you. And Allie goes, no, I'm coming to support. Just
yes.
like
oh my God.
So simple.
So
but
true.
I loved that because she wasn't letting Lisa put down her partner as if he's someone who can't be trusted and he's some little boy. And that, you know, she's always showed up in a way that, like, I want to have a partner and I want you, like, we're each other's partners. I'm not your keeper.
It's very mature. Like, she's really
very
mature. I really like that she doesn't need to be the spotlight. she doesn't need to be the center of attention, but she still gets her word in. She still gets her, she's still able to somehow assert herself, which is not easy to do, especially in your first season, especially when you're partnered with James, who takes up so much oxygen in a room. So for her to not be threatened by that and to just I really like her.
I'm a huge fan of her. I had her do an astrology reading.
Ooh, and
it was
a
big moment for me. Like,
oh my God, was she good?
Great. And I didn't. She's given me book recommendations about it. Like, she talked about astrology as like a way to find purpose in life, and like the goal is to find purpose in life, and this is like a tool you can use. And that's exactly the framing that I was interested in, you know, not like, oh, I have all the answers, but like, here's ways to think about things and how you can utilize
it.
And
yeah,
I found it very meaningful. And I don't know what I was expecting, you know, I was just interested. And I'm not like an LA person. I don't know a lot about my horoscope or like my zodiac sign. Like, I didn't really know anything going into it, but I was... So I think she is pretty totally. Incredible and is showing up very, like we talked about, showing up authentically. I think everyone on the show has shown up pretty authentically this season. And that is what has made it so good, is no one's trying to like portray a certain thing, like how Lala was trying to portray this sort of like perfect relationship.
Totally.
Or
yep,
Sheena used to try and portray things to be so perfect.
Oh, yeah,
and then
she's
just kind of like finally in a relationship where she just is, where she just exists. Mm-hmm. And it's just so nice to watch.
I think that having kids for some of them got them to that place too. I think that it put a lot of things into perspective. And I think that was one of the best things that ever that could have happened to, I think, Lala and Sheena in particular, probably, you know, just in terms of, again, how they think about, how they sort of rank things in their life about what's important and what they care about. I think you're so right to pinpointing those two.
I do think that Lala, though, and some of the things that reason people don't like her is that she's very preachy, as if she's like figured it all out. And she does it at every stage in her life. And the biggest mistake I think she's made in her life thus far, aside from Randall, is writing a book when she had nothing to write about. I'm sorry. Like, you were writing a memoir when you haven't, like, I was like, there's something that's going to happen in your life that's going to give you more of a reason to write.
And then something happened.
And then something happened. Like, yes, you lost your dad. Yes, you had an abortion at a young age. Like, yes, but like, give me more. I only read memoirs and books by people who've had experiences. And at your age, you just don't have the amount.
And I totally agree with everything you're saying. But did you read the interview she just did this week with Variety?
Yes. I'm a big fan of Louis.
Yeah,
Staples.
I love him. And he's one of the best Housewives writers right now. But he interviewed Lala. And there was a moment that actually showed me, because I agree with what you're saying. I think that she thinks she in some ways can be wise beyond her years, but I think it's an all encompassing like knowledge that she has.
But
and she
had it
she
at like age 27, and I'm
of
like,
of course,
come on,
of course. But in that interview, he says, if you were asked to be on Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, what would you do?
And she says,
and she
no.
was like, she says, no, there. I'm not on that level. I'm not at their level. I'm still kind of a mess. And like, I think that some of that facade, it's still melting away. But I think that to me, that answer was real. I was really excited to read that from her, because to me, it showed that she is letting some of that chip away, and she is she's letting us in slowly but surely even more. And so I get that again, that's another thing that gets me excited for next season. Let's see more of that from Lala, you know?
I'm excited with the fact that Bravo in general, but this season of Vanderpump Rules has let the fourth wall break so many times, because it's now not just like, oh, this affair happened. It's like, oh, look at, watch what happens live. It's like how the finale episode started, and we're now talking about like the show within the show, as opposed to as if the show doesn't exist. And that dynamic, and even talking about the business relationship that Lisa has with the Toms, like that's what we need to lead into, because that's what's real.
Yeah. And I think that you know, the last couple of years, I think probably starting with like Denise Richards, Bravo, Bravo, fucking Bravo. Like, I think that we as fans and probably also production thought of breaking the fourth wall as always having to be like the producer stepping in and there being this sort of like record scratch moment where like, it's like, we look at they look at the camera and they acknowledge it and we see the booms. But like, I agree that like with this show in particular, it'd be so beneficial if they leaned into that kind of fourth wall breaking of just like, even on the finale of Ariana saying to Kristen, Us Weekly reached out and they want comment on XYZ. Like, that to me is so interesting. And like acknowledging the fact that they have publicists and they have to release statements about certain things. And the one thing to me, and I this is not to criticize the finale because I think it's a pretty perfect episode of reality television, but the one thing I thought it was missing was just more of an acknowledgement and a discussion around like what was going on social media during that week and how intense it got so quickly online and how that was affecting what they were doing. Like, to me, some of Sandoval's actions have probably been informed by like the fact that he's become like the number one villain in pop culture right now, and whether that pushes him more towards the dark side or has just made him like try to distance himself from Raquel, I don't know. But acknowledging that portion of it, I think, is the one thing I'm missing in terms of the fourth wall breaking on Vanderpump Rules around this scandal. But I would love to see more of that going forward. I think that this group, I don't think we need it as much on Housewives, but with this group, it makes them feel more legit in the confines of the show, and it levels them up even more from being waiters at Sir.
Totally.
And they need as much of that they can get.
And the more we know about what's actually happening in their lives, the more we are invested in what's happening in their lives. And what was happening was the social media. It wasn't impacting Ariana because she was off of it, right? But we heard Schwartz say, I'm getting like killed out there. And then you hear Sandoval saying, well, stay off social media. Like, as he leaves the apartment.
Right.
And something that Ariana said during the Call Her Daddy podcast, which I'm not entirely through, but I've been working on it.
I've listened to it. It's long.
It's very long. Is she says that one of her biggest takeaways from the reunion is at the time that the reunion filmed, that Sandoval and Raquel, I think, both had it in their head that things were going to kind of like blow over, that it's really intense right now, but a few months from now, people aren't going to feel as strongly and they'll move on to the next big thing.
So delusional.
That hasn't, well, I mean, I don't think that's delusional. I mean, why did we not feel as strongly towards Lenny Hochstein, who did something pretty similar, or not similar, not the best friend? I get it, but like, we have, as a like Bravo and like media culture, held on to this for the longest. Like, I wish that the American public would hold on to like a school shooting for as long as we have held on to Scandal. You know, obsession.
I do think that, like, you know, by the time the reunion filmed, it was 3 weeks in, and it was showing no signs of slowing down. And I think it was delusional of them to think that it was about to blow over around that time. Like,
yeah,
I think when it first started, I could not have told you that it was going to be a 3 month, you know, sensation, essentially, that took over pop culture. But 3 weeks in, I think I could have told you it was going to last until through the end of the season, at least, airing. Yeah. And I think that I just don't think they had the right people around them around in March. They were being told the wrong things and given the wrong game plans, and it set them up to go in a direction that they could really come back from this ever, but they did everything wrong, I think, essentially, in terms of how to handle it publicly.
I agree. I also think, and you know, speaking of how do you respond in the moment and all of that, Raquel's family, it sounds like, really stepped in you know, the way that Sheena described it, in a sort of Britney Spears sort of way, where they were the ones that forced legal action. They're the ones that have made her go to this mental health facility. They apparently don't want her going back on the show. And it sounds like she's a woman without agency, where she lets other people make decisions for her, and she's not really in the driver's seat, which is very worrisome in general, like the fact that either she's so unwell that she can't be, or maybe she's never really been, or maybe her family mm-hmm. kind of was like, okay, we'll let you do this whole thing. But like now that you're on the, you know, front page of the New York Times, like it was crazy how big this blew up. Now they're mm-hmm. stepping in and being like, okay, we're going to fix this. We're going to fix you. But it's kind of like, where were they? I don't know. All of it is very weird.
There's definitely, I think it's an easy thing that people have teed off on, which is like her being like the ex-beauty queen who aged out of the competition. Like, it's an easy thing to make fun of. And I'm not defending it, but I do think that like some of the stuff that she's talked about in terms of like really not knowing who she is after doing all the beauty pageants and like not really having a job beyond being a reality star and a pretty new one at that, I would say. And like, you know, I think there's an element of like sadness to that idea of like this girl was lost. I mean, this woman was lost, and I don't know how deep that goes. I don't know if we've really, you know, gone deep into that to really understand that. I don't know if she showed us enough. But yeah, there's definitely an element of that. That's like how much, I mean, even just the text she sent to Ariana 2 days after it got exposed, it's a two liner thing saying, you know, I fucked up. Like, I'm so, so sorry. Like, didn't try to call her, didn't do like an essay over text. Like, it was just, to me, that told me that she has no understanding for how one, you know, how serious of like a transgression this was, but also two, just how it was all going to come across. I don't know. You're right. There's like a detachment from her almost to her own life. Because of, I think, of that directionless and that sort of sadness.
And she's a bit of a chameleon in that she like takes on the personality and the characteristics of the people that she spends time around, almost like she doesn't have her own personality mm-hmm. and there is no like grounding to her. And I think she knows that, but she's not sure what to do about it. And then mm-hmm. with Sandoval, I mean, he liked that because it was just, he was looking at a reflection of himself.
Yeah.
Is what was going on. So I don't know how one recovers from this level of like detachment from who they are. And, you know, we'll see. I hope she's getting this like mental health support that it sounds like she is getting. You know, at first everyone's like, she's at a spa. We haven't heard from her. We haven't seen her.
No, I believe she's getting treatment.
I do too. Yeah. She's writing letters. Like, where else do they take your, you know, they took your phone. Like,
right. Exactly. Exactly. Like, yeah.
So I hope that happens. Selfishly, I want her back on the show because I want to see how it plays out. But if mm-hmm. her family is going to like legally take over things, then I bet she won't be back. And then how do we navigate?
I don't know. I really don't know. And like, one thing I was thinking about this week, I was with a couple of people who work in PR, and the Caller Daddy interview had been announced, but they had not been released yet. And I was asking them, I was just sort of like, what would, if you were Raquel's team, if you were her representative, if you were her publicist, because at a certain point, she's going to have to do an interview. She's going to have to tell her side of things in an in-depth way, the way that Sandoval did on Howie Mandel's podcast and Ariana really did on Call Her Daddy. What outlet is that? What avenue is that? Who do you envision that being with? And nobody really had an answer because it's so unclear sort of what space would be sort of best for that to be shared.
I think her parents won't allow an interview.
But like ever? And, ever?
It's gonna, I think it could be years. Like, I think.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. I'm worried that she has like no agency, so that if they actually legally take over, if there's some sort of conservatorship, if they kind of, I don't know, a psychiatric hole, I don't know exactly what is happening, but if they have as much control over her that they're able to like press charges and like choose the lawyer. Like, she's not in control. Which, right. You know, then I can really see them stepping in and being like, no, we're not going to let anyone else exploit you. You know, you've been exploited because you have these problems. Like, you don't know who you are, and you know, you're easily manipulated and all of that. I don't know. I don't know who it would be.
It's just the idea of her basically, because in that series of events, in that perspective on it, it's like she will essentially just like disappear from public life and like never come back.
That's what I think will happen.
I mean, that's so hard to wrap my mind around.
I think will happen. The question is, how much is she like almost addicted to fame or cameras?
Exactly.
And then in that case, she might play the long game of like getting some help, but then always planning to return because people will still want to hear from her. Because so maybe she takes a season off and then comes back. Yeah. I don't know, but it seems it's like also she's not like in the driver's seat.
No, I can see that, and I think that, you know, a different kind of detachment. But Sandoval has clearly some sort of like detachment from her all of a sudden, because they leaked the quote unquote breakup, whether that's like valid or not, I don't know. That seems pretty one sided to me. I mean, the source used the term dip out, so like it was very unserious. But I'm sort of like, all of this is also if she's really going through it, if things are as dire as you're interpreting them to be, which I'm not saying they are.
I don't know.
Like Sandoval carried on a 7-month affair with a relationship with this woman, and he's just kind of like going about his life, performing shows. For all we know, he has no contact with her, not responding to these letters. That's a really scary kind of a detachment that he's exhibiting too.
Because
when this first broke, it's like, obviously if it, you know, they should stay together if this should quote unquote have all been worth it, you know, like if they're just going to break up after all this, like why even go through all this? But, you know, it says so much about him that he's just kind of letting Raquel go through this alone and just carrying on.
It does say a lot about him. I mean, that's exactly why Lala was like, he's dangerous. Yeah. And I think word dangerous can be interpreted in so many different ways, but he's emotionally
dangerous. Yeah, exactly.
He's emotionally.
In a relationship, that is dangerous to be like that. 100%.
He convinced her that this would all work out, and it didn't, right? Like, he was like, I have it handled. He convinced Schwartz he had it handled. Like, we've got a plan. I'm going to break up with Ariana. I'm going to go on Winter House. People are going to love me. And then, like, a few months down the line, I'll start dating Raquel. And I think she thought that would all come together and work out, and it didn't.
Right.
And so now they're trying to recalibrate, and he can't. He can't. So he's just like, he has no leg to stand on. So he's just like fucking continuing his midlife crisis. And I don't know. It's really sad to watch what happen. But when people told him, like, you don't actually love her, you don't love Raquel, you love the reflection of yourself. Like, I hope for his own sake and for the people that are around him that he listens to that and he tries to get help for it, but I don't think he will.
No. And I keep wondering, obviously he liked the reflection of himself. He liked that she would just follow along with whatever he wanted to have happen. But I also wonder how much of the thrill for him was lost when it became public, when Ariana knew about it, when it didn't have that, like, you know, exciting secrecy to it. You know what I mean? Like, I wonder if once that element was lost, whether he also kind of pulled back, because it wasn't hitting the same for him. You know what I mean? Like, it's the whole thing. I just like, I wish that he would be a little more truthful, or maybe he just needs to have more time for some self introspection. Because I don't think he really even understands why he did it for fully. You know what I mean? I don't think that he's gotten there yet.
I don't know that he ever will get there.
Yeah, no, I, like, I agree. But, I'm giving him too much credit by saying yes.
No.
But he has not voiced his inner, his like deeper like
issues,
reasoning for doing this.
Yes. And I think for when you said, what did you just say? You said like he hasn't been truthful or he hasn't been fully upright and honest. I don't know that he knows how to, because he got so comfortable lying that he, the things that come out of his mouth.
So like, true.
I think that he's somewhat even confused himself or for what's real and what's not real, because he's just gotten so comfortable saying things that are untrue that they've almost become truth.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I think, well, he's also living, he's been living a double life for, you know, over half a year. So I think you're, I think that's very accurate. I think that he probably confused himself. And so maybe this quote, this, I think this short pause they're putting the show on just to like, I think having, you know, cooling things off a little bit. Hopefully, I mean, I doubt that he's doing the work, but who knows what he comes back as? Who knows?
Who knows?
Because you know that he's not leaving the show. There's no way.
And I don't want him to. We need to.
I don't want. I don't want him to either. I'm so curious about what that looks like. But you know that even if, even though it is probably the best thing for him to probably not be on the show, he could never. He could never turn it away.
Well, just like Teresa and Melissa, the best thing for them would to be off TV, but they've just decided that's not an option. You're too far in. Yep.
Yeah, you're too far in.
Well, Gibson, thank you so much for joining and for spending so much time. I feel like I always go over time with guests. I'm so sorry about that. Tell everyone where they can find you on social media, where they can listen to In the Know, or We Should Talk, sorry, about podcasts by In the Know, all the stuff.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I love coming on here because you force me to think about things in a different, deeper way. No, I'm serious. I think it's like, I think sometimes it's just, I just like to dig deeper. Sometimes I think we can think about things on a surface level at these shows, but there's so many layers to things. And I just appreciate some of the points that you make about these shows. It really makes me think differently about them.
Thank you so much.
But of course, I'm Gibson Oma on any social media platforms, GibsonOma. I have a newsletter that's in my bios across social media, and I have a podcast called We Should Talk. We do one interview a week, usually with a Bravo person, otherwise with another sort of like celebrity type person. And you can find it wherever you hear podcasts. But yeah, thanks so much for having me. This is always, it's always so fun with you.
It's always so fun. And we should hang out next time you're in DC.
Yes. Oh my God. My hometown. Yes.
I'll talk to you soon.
Yeah.